Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. You're tuned into 101.5 FM. This is the station that tries to entertain you, inform you, and maybe amuse you once in a while. Well, today, I have an article that I found in Sunday's paper. It was a letter that was written into Tom Skilling, the weatherman at WGN. And this person wanted to know, says, "Dear Tom, when the temperature is below freezing, what determines if the precipitation will be freezing rain or snow?" And so Tom gives him the following answer, and I thought I would pass it along to you. He says, "The determining factor for precipitation type, whether it's rain or snow or an icy mix, is the temperature of the atmosphere from the cloud-bearing altitude down to the ground. If it is above freezing from the surface to roughly, say, 1,000 feet or more above, it will rain. If rain from an above freezing layer aloft falls onto a sub-freezing surface, then the result will be freezing rain. And if rain should fall through a thick enough sub-freezing layer below it, it freezes, forming ice pellets, and we call those sleet. If precipitation begins aloft as snow, and it stays below freezing all the way down to the surface, the resulting precipitation will be snow. And when low-level temps are a few degrees above freezing, snow aloft may partially melt on its way down. And this results in a mixture of rain and snow. So tune in to your local weatherman, your favorite station, on TV in the evening when you watch for the next day's weather. And keep this in mind, if you will. And then we'll go on to our first more lengthy item of the day. And that is the Dark Ages. The Dark Ages, which are really being brought to light much more than in the past, as a result of gilded pages, few, fragile, and precious. These illuminated manuscripts reveal the vibrancy of early Christianity and not a dark period. King Henry VIII, you will remember him, largely deserves blame for the dearth of medieval manuscripts today. Within 2 years of breaking with the Roman Catholic Church in 1534, King Henry VIII ordered all of England's monasteries destroyed and their libraries burned or dispersed. One horrified commentator of the time wrote that precious manuscript pages were being used to wipe boots and to wrap groceries. Well, these are the kinds of stories that are explored in a new book by Mary Wellesley. That new book is The Gilded Page, The Secret Lives of Medieval Manuscripts. She describes the crumbling parchments that survived Henry's purge as tangible, smellable, and visual encounters with the past. And thanks to Wellesley's expertise and passion for her subject, we practically hear the voices of the scribes and the artists who produced these rare relics of the Middle Ages. The medieval period stretches from roughly the end of the Western Roman Empire to the beginning of the Renaissance. In other words, AD 450 to 1450. And this epoch is often misconstrued as the Dark Ages, a barren interlude between the glories of Rome and the rebirth of art and learning. The main monuments during those thousand years are Romanesque and Gothic cathedrals. But in Wellesley's view, ancient manuscripts are an equal, though less accessible, legacy. Their illuminated pages bring to light a period that we've often referred to as being in darkness. Her book discusses English manuscripts that were produced from the 8th century to the 1600s. It makes clear how big a role happenstance played in their survival. The Cuthbert Gospel, made around the late 7th century, was discovered when a tomb was opened after 400 years. This earliest intact book in Europe speaks to us across the centuries. It offers evidence of a flourishing monastery and an international center of learning in the early days of Christianity. And there's another important manuscript, the Book of Marjorie Kemp, about 1373 to 1438. This was discovered in 1934 by a family that was rummaging about in a cabinet for ping pong balls, and dictated by an illiterate woman, a mother of 14 children, who wished to leave an honest record of her life. It is the first piece of autobiographical writing in English. And so I can highly recommend this very interesting nonfiction book to you. Remember, its title is The Gilded Page, The Secret Lives of Medieval Manuscripts by Mary Wellesley, and it's published by Basic Book. And from the Dark Ages, we're going to outer space, or the war in orbit. A recent Russian anti-satellite test created a dangerous cloud of space debris and raised the risk of war in space. What was Russia's test? To assess and demonstrate its ability to blow up U.S. satellites, Russia launched a missile from the ground that flew 310 miles up into space and blew up a 2-ton Soviet-era surveillance satellite that was in low Earth orbit. The explosion created a cloud of shrapnel that will threaten satellites and humans in space for decades to come. American, German, and Russian astronauts on the International Space Station at an orbit 60 miles below the satellite had to shelter and transport capsules for hours ready to evacuate in case of collision. The explosion doubled the number of objects in the most highly traveled region of near-Earth orbit, and it sent 1,500 pieces of debris larger than 2 inches and hundreds of thousands of smaller fragments hurtling around the planet at 17,000 miles per hour, much faster than a bullet. A single paint fleck moving at that speed can severely damage a commercial or government satellite, while a pebble-sized chunk could destroy one, or it could instantly kill an astronaut on a spacewalk. You may ask, why did Russia do this? Russia is not the first state actor to test an anti-satellite technology. The US and China and India have all done so in years past, but it is the first to generate so much debris in this highly used level of orbit. As a direct result, every maneuverable object currently in low Earth orbit will have to perform avoidance maneuvers whenever debris comes close. This takes them offline and it wastes fuel. The dollar cost to all actors in space will be immense. Analysts say it's no accident that President Putin chose this moment when Russian troops are massing off the Ukrainian border and NATO is threatening sanctions to demonstrate Russia's ability to destroy the satellites that the US military relies on to communicate among troops and to guide its own bombs to their targets. The test comes against a background of a lot of lower level Russian aggression in space. What is vulnerable? There are nearly 3,400 active satellites now in orbit. Imagine. Any one of them is theoretically at risk. These include the military satellites that the US uses for crucial intelligence gathering, such as early warning of nuclear missile launches, and other satellites in low Earth orbit where the Russian test occurred include the Hubble Space Telescope, mapping satellites, and a proliferating number of commercial satellites. Higher up, medium Earth orbit contains many navigation satellites, while most of the world's telecommunication and GPS satellites tend to be farther up at 22,000 miles in geostationary orbit. Russia warned last week that it could destroy 32 GPS satellites, which would cause chaos in the United States. There's a chain reaction scenario possible here. Earth's orbit is cluttered with 3,000 defunct satellites and 36,000 smaller pieces of debris, including spent rocket stages and other discards from launches, pieces of broken satellites, and hundreds of thousands of tiny fragments. There's more stuff that's there, and the more likely it is that collisions will occur. The nightmarish possibility is that a small number of collisions could create a cascading chain reaction in which pieces of space junk are sent crashing into each other. and the destroying satellites and leaving a debris belt around the Earth that would render satellite use impossible. This is a frightening scenario. It is known as the Kessler syndrome, after the former NASA scientist Donald Kessler. And it is now 5% more likely after Russia's last test, according to most scientists. Yet SpaceX alone plans to send up another 42,000 satellites. What is it going to take to take all of this seriously? Well, this is probably even more serious than our climate change, and we'd better get on the subject seriously. Many people are now calling for a new treaty for space. Not only is there yet no ban on creating debris, but there isn't even an international system to monitor satellite traffic. Currently, satellite providers voluntarily send emails to alert each other to near passes. Some analysts warn of a future in which the realm beyond Earth's atmosphere becomes so cluttered it would be unusable. If we fail to design rules that prevent our orbital activity from becoming self-defeating and destructive, we will soon find that we have squandered another of the Earth's resources. It's time for a look at the category of health and science. And we're going to stay in space as I tell you a bit about the Webb telescope getting set to look at the ancient cosmos. The most powerful space telescope ever built has finished its delicate deployment process, setting the stage for the observatory to look back in time to the very beginnings of the universe. Launched on Christmas Day, NASA's $10 billion James Webb Space Telescope is now more than 700,000 miles into its million-mile, month-long journey to Lagrange Point 2. And that is a gravitationally stable spot where it will circle the sun in a steady orbit until at least 2026. As the tennis court-sized spacecraft zipped through space, the equipment began to unfurl. It will allow it to study the cosmos, and the first to unfold was Webb's 70-foot-wide sun shield, which protects against solar radiation and keeps the telescope at minus 380 degrees Fahrenheit, so that the Webb's own heat signature won't interfere with equipment designed to detect infrared light from distant stars. Next, Webb's secondary mirror locked into position. It's ready now to collect concentrated light from the telescope's main mirror and send it to Webb's instrument module. And finally, the main mirror opened, 18 gold-plated hexagonal segments that together will act as a 21-foot-wide light bucket intended to collect light from the first stars and the first galaxies that formed in the wake of the Big Bang over 13 billion years ago. We're going right up to the edge of the observable universe with Webb. Hang on. We continue with the health part of health and science today by telling you that a team of British scientists has developed an artificial intelligence system, or AI, that can predict with remarkable accuracy whether a patient is on course to develop dementia, a breakthrough that could revolutionize the diagnosis of this disease. The AI was fed data for more than 15,000 people with an average age of 72. They had attended memory clinics across the US. The data included medical records, results from tests on memory and cognitive performance, and family health history. And out of that group, over 1,500 were diagnosed within 2 years as having dementia after an assessment by a panel of experts. The AI successfully predicted who would receive a diagnosis with 92% accuracy, according to the Times in the United Kingdom. That's nearly 10 percentage points more accurate than standard human-based screening methods for the neurodegenerative disorder. This technique is a significant improvement over existing approaches, and it could give doctors a basis for recommending lifestyle changes and identifying people who might benefit from support or in-depth assessment. Oh, well, it looks like we're coming toward the end of our program today, but I have some things to tell you at the very end of the show. It's called Food for Thought. For example, nearly 12% of the first-time home buyers have indicated that selling cryptocurrency holdings contributed toward a down payment for a house. And that's roughly in line with the share of first-time buyers who relied on a cash gift from family for their down payment. And then Tesla sold over 900,000 cars globally in 2021, and that's an 87% increase for the year. Measured by vehicles delivered globally, the company vaulted past Volvo and Subaru, and if it approaches 2 million sales in 2022, as some people expect, it will be in the same league as BMW and Mercedes. And so, we're right at the point where I tell you what's forthcoming, because we want you to tune in for some more information, some more entertainment, and maybe some amusement here and there. And in forthcoming programs, we're going to tell you about the history of the potato chip. We're going to tell you about snowboarding. Explain a little bit about that. And we'll talk about cat's eyes and the way they change with the darkness. And then we'll have some tips for your health. And that brings me to say, I want you to be careful out there. Stay healthy. And be kind to each other. Everyone will appreciate that. It'll even surprise some people. But it's time now to ask you to please tune in to 101.5 FM and listen to a little of this, a little of that. We like to have you around. And we like you to listen to my friend Willie Nelson take us home with his On the Road Again, as Willie and I go looking for more items to fit into a little of this, a little of that. So, y'all come back here. We'll be waiting for you this time, this place. Goodbye. Running.